This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me to discuss the drama of the last day of the season, Mr. Phil Shaw, Mr. Chris Bird.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Hello.
How are you two gentlemen?
Not bad. Glad to be rid of
the season. Have you calmed down?
I've dialed it back slightly, but not a lot. I can wind it back up if you'd like.
What we're going to do this show is we're going to just go straight into that City game, and then we're going to finish off with the start of the show at the end, because we're still we haven't calmed down yet. We're still
there's genuine still anger
fiery.
There.
When we started Match Club, Match Club is our secret society club for My Old Man Said patrons. We got together before the game. The virtual meet. We talked before the game, halftime, after the game. Intelligent conversation, proper debate, not like the rest of the fucking Villaverse. But a gentleman said to me, because I'd said a couple of times on the podcast how I met some Liverpool fans once upon a time, the Spirit of Shankly, who I knew from the Football Supporters Association over the years. And their joke to me was always that Villa's European Cup win in Merseyside was classed as a win for Liverpool. And because there's so many, is it five Liverpudlians, or they came from Merseyside, from the captain to the scorer of the goal, from the assist maker, it goes on. So they'd always classed it jokingly to me as I don't think they'd won their last European Cup when they said it, so they're sixth. It's like the Pete Best and the Beatles. So somebody in Match Club mentioned that to me and said, oh, so if we win today against City, does it class as our title win? And I thought they were just referring to the where the players came from. I said, not really. What he obviously meant was you could dine out on that as saying that we'd won the title for you. And when you look at it, the context of it, it's exactly what it would have been. I mean, as a Villa fan, you could just walk into Liverpool and any time for probably the next year and not have to pay for a drink. It's just a direct correlation. We would have literally won the title and, you know, we wouldn't be here recording this podcast because we'd still be online taking the piss out of Manchester City fans and taking in the love of Liverpool fans. It was all set up. When you 2-0 up in that situation, it's you start to think this is going to be a glorious end to the season. Okay, you know, you not necessarily want Liverpool to win. I mean, my scenario where I'm coming from in terms of the league title is I just don't want the dark monetary force of Manchester City, the
sovereign wealth,
pollution of football to win it. I mean, it's all right saying, you know, well, what a great team. They play great football. What a manager. But, you know, they're paying what their fullbacks cost over double our record signing. So it's hardly a fair situation. But anyway, I'm rambling on. But, I mean, the first problem we had was we were wearing that fucking blue kit, which have we even got a point
no,
wearing
No, I
that
can't
kit?
Remember. Needs to be banished.
I thought it was just a case of we hadn't won in it, but can't recall even a point. In terms of formation, kind of interesting, because I think the cookie-cutter formation would have been Nakamba in, probably stuff up that middle of the park, and you know, maybe even play two DMs. You could have played Luiz and Nakamba alongside each other, couldn't you? But it was a bit more adventurous than I expected.
Well, we said in something for the weekend, didn't we, that you can't go to use the boxing analogy. You aren't going to go to Man City and win on points. You're going to have to go and sort of get knockout blows. And to be fair, for 70 minutes, I thought Villa got their game plan spot on. Soaked up pressure, held them at arm's length, took the two goals well. You know, we'll come on to it, but wasted two massive chances as well to do more damage. But if you'd have said you're going to be 2-0 up with 20 minutes to go at old, you know, at the Etihad, you kind of go, fucking hell.
15, even.
Yeah. And we were brave, weren't we? We picked our moments because you're gonna have to. You know, if you just go gung-ho at City, they're going to tear you to shreds if you open up. But we picked our moments, and I think when we went, we did really well.
Well, there was a stat, I think it was before the Burnley game that was going around. I can't remember the specifics of it, but I think it was outside like the top three teams. We had conceded the less shots on goal or on target probably than any other team, which considering where we are in the league is kind of interesting. But it certainly, you saw it in that first half because Olsen, I mean, that was the thing we haven't mentioned yet. Out of nowhere, we thought we'd... ridden the Martinez injury because we thought he might miss the Burnley game, but got through that, and then suddenly the real game you need him in, and you know, who knows, it may have been a difference in the end. Although I'll come on to Olsen's contribution in a sec. He didn't really have much to do, Olsen, in that first half, but his big contribution was his kicking. Just I'm talking about his just hoofs up front, because he put Watkins clean through
and should have scored.
The one that was initially flagged offside, but actually VAR would have overturned that because he's actually starting his run. Once the kick is made, he's inside his own half, mm-hmm. and he should have scored. And it's not the first time in this game. And then the Coutinho goal was actually from a long kick as well. So I remember, if you cast your mind back to Villa Park, Manchester City, Villa trying to play it out, getting stuck in their own six-yard box against Manchester City's press. There is some credit to just humping it down.
Turn them around.
Yeah.
Because if you've got somebody like Watkins to run on, and I think he laid it off, did he not, for Coutinho, then it's definitely worth throwing in the Arsenal.
I think so.
Yeah, it's variety, isn't it? I mean, as we said, Liverpool use variety. I mean, City, not so much, but we've seen City do it as well. Ederson with a big hoof up front. And it's what you need to do. I mean, if City are so good at the press and so good at hemming you in, just bypass it, get it over it, and then see what happens.
Because they don't like the nitty-gritty defending, I don't think. They like playing out from the back. They're ball playing centre-backs. But when you have to kind of go, you know, you get
it's
them
creating pressure, isn't it? It's creating pressure on their back line, and that's how you beat them.
100%. Yeah. 100%. That's what Real Madrid did in the Champions League.
Exactly.
You make them defend. You make them make decisions in their own 18-yard, 6-yard box. Run at the fullbacks. Commit them.
Because a lot of the time, they're not battle-ready. They're not week in, week out. They're not sweating, are they? They're not like fucking, you know, Mings and co. And if you just out of spurt, you know, spurts of pressure, they're liable to snap.
Especially if you can do things quickly, be it, you know, pace across the ground, or just, as you said, just turn them around quickly and make them face their own goal, which no defender likes to do.
Yeah.
Especially Fernandinho in the first half.
Because the argument about playing long is always, well, you're just giving the ball straight back to them and, you know, you're making it 50-50 straight away. And it's like, well, have you seen us trying to play it out the back?
That's not 50-50.
We give the ball straight back to them in our own half.
Yeah,
so
it's much better to give the ball back.
That's probably the percentages, isn't it? I'll take 50-50 at Man City away.
It's more like the rugby philosophy, isn't it, where you just kick it up
territory.
Pitch.
Play territory.
Yeah, territorial, yeah.
Which is what we probably should have done at times when we were defending, just get rid, put it in the stand.
Any standouts? I mean, I think collectively they lost that game after the 70th minute
performance.
Great first goal. I thought it was great cash move. Popping up.
Then you're involved again, wasn't it? Another assist.
Great ball.
We've seen him probably the last, month? Maybe 6 weeks, but definitely the last month. What Dean you can be moving forward. You think, actually, he's been probably, certainly in my view, the most individual bright spark of the final run-in of the season, where you think, there's definitely clearly there's a player there. You don't get in the French squad and start at left back for them if you're a bad player. But you know what I mean? You think he's definitely got another gear he's going to go into next year when he's settled and his family here. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, as I said, in Match Club, I think we've got fullbacks that we can be happy with, because I think Cash has been, I mean, when we were fluffing around at the start of the season, Cash was probably the standout performer.
Yeah.
Probably the only one you were giving any credit to, and he's still got another level, I think,
especially going forward.
This is probably I think he needs to sharpen up his back post game when it comes to defending, because they got him a couple of times City there.
Well, he's not the tallest either,
but it's more from a positional
I thought both fullbacks played well, certainly for 70 minutes. I thought, surprisingly, considering the pressure they were put under, I thought Douglas Luiz anchored the midfield reasonably well. I thought Watkins, while he was very wasteful, you see the value to him and why Southgate likes him with England, because he just chases everything and he works really hard. And, you know, he should at least come out of that game with at least one goal. But his work rate was second to none.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about Watkins. If you're playing one up front, he's like a one-man press. He covers so much. He can actually...
he's aggressive with it.
Pretty much entertain and keep a whole back line guessing and alive. And he's a bit of the thorn in the side. It was interesting that last season we were saying, you know, he's been so unlucky. He's hit the woodwork, you know, 5-6 times. He's had 3 or so goals chalked offside or by VAR. And you're thinking there's definitely a 20-goal season player there. This season, it's not so unlucky. It's more like he should be putting that one away.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the themes of multiple players in the team in general, has been a lack of a clinical edge in both penalty areas, as Phil Gerrard has said.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's you have the player to do this, and then for some inexplicable reason, it's just not happening. I mean, we've talked about how many Danny Ings has missed over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
You would never have said that about him his whole career. And then after Watkins last season, like you said, you wouldn't have said it this season. But it's, at times, his first touch has just deserted him. And now there's other times, it's strange. It's almost as if he's so obsessed with the press, like you say, like being that one-man press, that when suddenly the one-man press works and he's clean through, it's like, there's a hesitation. It's like, it's not instinctive anymore.
Yeah, I think in that interview he did, I think it was The Guardian, one of the things the journalist picked out was Gerrard saying that perhaps he overthinks things and he's a bit harsh on himself and he probably needs to relax a little bit more when he's actually playing, and that probably feeds into that taking that extra touch maybe when he should be pulling the trigger.
Yeah, certainly.
Being a bit too conservative.
It's almost like the chance today, especially the one in the first half, he should have just had a go in that with his left foot, because we've seen against Brighton in exactly the same position, put clean through like that, one touch, one goal. So what was different about today? And then in the second half, it was just like, you just knew he was going to stumble the ball into the keeper. It was never fully under his control.
Yeah, and that's the sorry thing now, because from his Brentford days and his first season at Villa, if he was put through, you as a supporter, you're thinking, oh, he's going to get this. But now you're thinking, yeah, when he's cleaned through, it's like, yeah.
You didn't fancy him in the Burnley game, did you, when he got put through either? He's had a few chances recently where you think, again, he needs to just go away for the summer and regroup like so many of them do.
But some people were saying, Ings should have played, or bring Ings on. It's like, well, actually, you know, it's a similar problem with Ings over the last 3 or 4 games. He hasn't been, as you said, chances that he would normally take. I mean, some of them, you know, outside the box, having a swing, but, you know, you only have to watch Match of the Day over the last couple of seasons when you see the Southampton highlights and Ings is winning them games out of nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think the second chance where Watkins sort of bumbles it, you know, wide, I actually think Ings probably scores that.
Yeah.
That
one. But there's this, it's typical social media fans where they're saying, oh, we need upgrades at striker, we need upgrades. I mean, a third striker would be good just from a squad point of view. But also, you got to remember, when people are saying the same thing about Mings, Mings and Watkins are in this current England team. Then maybe not the starting 11, but they're on the fringes, and they'll get games in like a tournament first round, shall we say, as Mings did in the last Euros. So, how did Villa get and attract players that are actually better than them? And are they really going to pay, you know, to get players better than them? You're looking at 50 million, 60 million. And when you've got players that, you know, who are good, and I've got no problems with Watkins and Mings, no problems at all.
None.
I don't think Villa are looking at those positions in terms of strengthening the team.
No, it's not the priority. Gerrard came out and said that just before the Burnley game, where he was saying, you know, it's all about, you know, I'm looking to improve the starting 11. By doing that, you naturally improve your squad, and I want to improve my spine. So he's looking for key players, centre-back or two, defensive midfielder. I bet the top of the pitch he's probably not too worried about, especially now he's got the choice of Buendia and Coutinho. Then you've got Ramsey, McGinn can get involved, and then you've got two strikers. He's probably thinking, if the opportunity came up where I could buy someone to improve that little group of players, then you're buying one hell of a player.
Yeah.
And I would even throw out that I would definitely be comfortable with, if the only addition is in that, in terms of strikers, is Archer in the match day
into
squad.
Into a rotation.
because not necessarily rotation at all. I'm just thinking on the bench to bring on for, you know, whatever you need for the last 10 minutes.
Five, an option, isn't he? He's not going to be a starter for
five,
you.
5 minutes, whatever. Because as we've seen, his finishing has been, you know, super clinical. So he's like a one chance man. That's, if you get that chance, you know, 2 minutes into injury time and he's on the end of it, you'd back him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what you said. Who are you going to upgrade over Watkins? What striker are you going to bring in? That, I mean, you're not going to go and bring Harry Kane in because that's who's ahead of Watkins in the England squad.
Yeah, I was going to say the only players above a Mings or a Watkins, if you're talking about Mings as well, are players in the top three teams.
The only one who's close for Watkins, I don't think you'd go after in England terms, which is probably someone like a Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who is not a banker.
I'd take Watkins over him.
I would, yep. for especially the way we want to play.
Yeah, he's just certainly a lot more mobile.
Yeah.
You remember when Liverpool signed Crouch, just to give him something completely different?
They had four strikers, though, at that point.
Yeah, no, exactly. Variety. So there's a that's one option you could be going in for. But I think there's just, in terms of making that purchase, there's more important ones ahead of that to create a more solid 100%. Team.
100%.
That's like a bit of garnish on the top, really.
And as we've said so many times, you know, I think if you get the foundations right, I think you get more out of those attacking players as well.
Yeah.
It's sort of that natural cycle.
When you look at the stats, something that pops out is McGinn only 24 touches for the whole game. Ramsey for 82 minutes, only 18 touches.
I think we bypassed midfield a lot. I think that's a tactical thing.
Yeah, best moments attacking was definitely when we went long. And obviously defensive, they would have been just closing down space and keeping City at arm's length.
Yeah, and you're winning the ball back, and it's kind of thinking, well, especially against City, if you win the ball back in the sort of the deeper midfield position, do we have a lot of options in front to pass to? No.
Yeah, I mean, the only real criticism I would probably aim at Ramsey would be something that we've said before. He's probably not as sharp off the ball when we are defending our 18-yard box, because their second goal, he kind of just ghosted back and he wasn't uptight to, or he didn't sprint to close, you know, he didn't see the danger of Rodri, you know, just hovering around the edge of the 18 when the ball rolled out to him. Ramsey was the only chance to close that down, and he wasn't, you know, sharp enough to see that danger ahead of schedule.
Yeah, you could say that for a lot of them. They don't expect the worst to happen. I mean, this is City you're playing. I mean, they have the best players. We've already said they have the best players, so they can do the unexpected. So you have to stop them even having the chance to do that.
Yeah, it's just like pick your man and defend. You know, if you're playing where Ramsey is, and you don't have to, like, you know, defend deep. And City, you know, they've got it down the flanks and they've got runners coming from midfield. Pick one of the fuckers up. And that was the obvious one. At the end of the game, I tweeted, I've had enough of this kind of losing mentality BS, which is, you know, when people say, oh, it's typical Villa. And we were seeing it all the time, like against Manchester United, the amount of games that they won in the dying stages or flipped to
2-0
deficit, you know,
or whatever.
Yeah.
It's always 2-0 deficit. Well, yeah. The amount of times they flip that against us, as well as it's typical United, it's also typical Villa. And then, you know, this season we've already seen it with, you know, the Watford game, Wolves more to the point, which was almost identical. What was that? 3 goals in 10 minutes. This was 3-5. And, you know, you've seen so many people say typical Villa. So that's what I meant by that. And this was a prime example, and it's actually been injected into Gerrard. He'll know now 100% what this kind of losing mentality is. We seem to be attracted to it. And I think the good news is Gerrard would say exactly the same thing.
He's identified it very quickly. You've seen his interviews. He's said as much.
He knows it.
And before Burnley said as much in terms of the culture, he said it's getting there, but it's not there yet. He knows.
Yeah. And this is the main hope is hopefully that's going to be stamped out sooner than later. And you know, when you got a fan base making excuses, going, oh, they're bringing on, you know, they got £100 million on the bench, and you know, this is the best team in the world, and you know, we were tired at the end, and it's like, what is this? We're 2-0 up. We concede 3 goals in 5 minutes. It's not good enough
against anyone.
Even if we're a League 2 team in the FA Cup third round against Manchester City, we conceded 3-5. You'd be pissed off still.
Yeah,
this is not good. But we're not that. We're an elite level club that have been spending big on players, and we crumble.
My takeaway from the season has been Phil's quote when he said it earlier this year. Villa, and you said it on Twitter, I think, after the game, Villa are a glass jaw team. You know, when the tide turns against them, they crumble, don't they? They don't stand up, take the punches, and then counter-punch. They haven't done it for ages. We did it a little bit, to be fair, under Smith last season.
When was that when we were the best at coming from behind? Was that in the Smith's tenure?
I can imagine. It might have been,
but
yeah.
But that's against a different level of
different level.
Punching.
And we had ultimately
we were
had
punching
some of the best,
down all the time.
Yeah,
we
had some of the best players in that league. The expectation was high. If anything, we made hard work of it. But this sort of attitude of when the game starts to drift or a decision doesn't go our way, or prime example was the City game. You know, we said in Match Club that a good side, and we've said it all season about the leadership and responsibility, and that's part of your mentality, is when that first what would have been a consolation goes in, who's grabbing the troops and going, right, we don't let this slip now. We shut the game down now. We've switched off. We've given them our error, which we frankly, we have an error every week.
I don't think they had time to
have time. Now, you could say there's
They were 3-2 down before they could even open the mouth.
There's a bit of City blitzkrieg going on, and you say, well, fair play to them, but they're a class side. But you have to find a way to stop the tide turning against them.
Stop the momentum, do whatever.
That's where having Emi Martinez on the field, I think, comes in. Because if a cross, for example, comes in, he'll grab it and he'll lie on the floor and he'll take a yellow card and piss the fans off.
I mean, you just have to look at their keeper. I mean,
Edison at the end, rolling around like an old cramp.
Edison rolling around, and you know, and it always pains me when you hear the commentators going, "Oh, well, at least he won't be missing any games this season, and hopefully it's not too." And it's like this fucking come on, he's fucking rolling around, time wasted on purpose.
Yeah,
because keepers are always told to do that. Come on, wake up. I mean, there is the debate. If Martinez was fit, would the result be any different? Now, I think maybe in terms of preventing their goals, you could make a case for it. I mean, obviously, the game would transpire completely different. I would say, though, that Olsen's kicking was directly responsible for one goal and almost, you know, got us another one if Watkins had been a bit sharper. So he did make a contribution to actually get Villa into a position where we could have actually won that game. So it's a bit of a hard one. I mean, if Martinez suddenly came on when we were 2-0 up, I think we would have seen that game out.
Yeah, well, I mean, Olsen didn't really make a save, so we can't judge him on a mistake. I mean, he could have maybe got down better to the second one, but we won't know because it was well placed, was right in the corner. But like you said,
it's not really a debate or a conversation, really, is it? To have, I think the only there was one where I thought, you know, Martinez would have had an outside chance of making a world class save. I think it was the
first one with the header.
Yeah. That's probably it.
If we'd have put a hand of God out.
And then you would want him in the latter stages just to wind the clock down. That would be the main difference there.
That was my frustration really with that game, is that in throwing away a 2-goal lead against Man City, better teams than Villa will do that. Don't lose the game.
We just played our part. It's almost like we were playing a part, right? So this is how this game's going to play out. Sky Sports came into the changing rooms at the start. We need a bit of drama. So what's going to happen is you're going to go 2-0 up, and then, like, in 15 minutes to go, City are going to stage the great comeback. It's almost like we just played our part.
And you're not going to get any credit for it. We're going to say it was City were brilliant.
Yeah. When they score their first goal, you know, just let it all transpire.
Let it all hang out.
Let it all literally drop your pants.
It's embarrassing because when you consider how long it takes to actually take a kickoff again, for City to score 3 goals in 5 minutes when Villa kicked off 3 times during that period, I mean, take an age over the kickoff. Make a sub during that bit. Just do something, anything. That's what teams do to develop. Break the momentum. Just anything. Kick it back straight to your own keeper.
As soon as they scored that first goal, a Villa player should have been on the floor, like pretending he's dying or something.
Yeah. Actually, it probably would have been if he'd been on the pitch, but he was too late by the time he came on.
Just hold up that kickoff for as long as possible. Break that momentum because it comes like a swell, isn't it? You know it's coming, and straight away you feel the worst.
And it all comes down to the control word we've used. It's being able to control the tempo and the flow of the game. We just can't. And then when the game starts to go against us, we're like, oh shit, we just almost like back ourselves into a corner.
I mean, the sad bit is now how we sit in history now, which I was trying to articulate at the start of the show was, it's like being a QPR fan and having to watch that fucking Aguero goal all the time on Sky Sports. It's going to be Villa in the highlights every time they talk about Manchester City scoring those goals to win 3-2.
Yep.
That's our life for the rest of our days now.
I mean, to be fair, though, at least for QPR, they stayed up on that last game of the season. So it was also a pretty joyous moment for them.
Well, so did we. We've stayed up as well.
But I'm
just saying, like, our place in history.
Yeah.
Now, if Villa had won and Liverpool had won the league, there's no way they could mention Liverpool winning the league without mentioning Aston Villa. There's no way you can do that.
And Gerrard and Coutinho and the narrative that they'd worked so hard all week, bless them, the poor press, to make come to life.
So we would have actually, it's probably on the level of winning a League Cup in today's currency.
Well,
anyway,
the Charity Shield
would have been relevant and mentioned, you know, in the context of Scouse Sports, as Liam Gallagher calls it.
No, my personal favorite was just if we have to mention Grealish one time, we'll mention it now. It's like you can take Grealish out of Villa, but you can't take the Villa mentality out of Grealish, because in his interview he says, after Villa went 2-0 up, truthfully, I didn't think we were going to do it. I just didn't. Sometimes you have these bad feelings in your head and I just didn't think we were going to do it. Well, that's exactly why Pep left you in the bench then, because
they need to get rid of him. He's got that Villa mentality in him.
Yeah. They brought on players that did think they could do it, and unfortunately they did.
Yeah. But this is the thing. One of the biggest markets nowadays is these self-help books and the self-affirmation. And a lot of it just boils down to just believe in yourself. I can do it. Self-affirmation. You know, repeat this mantra in the morning, blah, 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 blah. That's all it is. It's just this. And the top winners just have this blind belief. And that's why your Manchester United's back in the Ferguson days, your Liverpool's can turn around 3-0 defeats in the Nou Camp, and Manchester United can fucking go into a European Cup final 1-0 down with seconds of injury time left and still manage to win 2-1. It's this belief that you're not beaten until you're dead, until there's no pulse. And we don't have that. And that's what we need in the fan base as well, I may add.
Belief?
Yeah, it's fucking Ted Lasso, isn't it?
I'll talk about it on this show and then I'll just draw a line under it because I'm sick of talking about it. But you've seen what's happened at St James's. Got rid of the owner. They got a new manager. Now, you look at Newcastle's team, man for man, would any of their guys get in our squad? Maybe San Maximan, tactically, maybe. But other than that, not a single player would get in our starting lineup, I don't think. Yet they are now 4 points ahead of us.
Whoa, let's not be too hasty.
Having not won a game before January.
I might take that 60 or 80 million midfielder they brought in. I might take him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
The broad strokes of what you're saying is
some of the parts you've got.
Correct.
We're pretty sickened when you look at, and Gerrard is, and we said it in Smith a Weekend, McGuinness, you look at the table, we're in 14th, which in itself is bad as a number. And then you look at what's above you.
Brentford. I'll say it one more time. Brentford.
Brighton.
Brighton, Brentford.
Palace.
I don't want it to be this where they're only below us in when it's the first table of the season before a game has been played, because of alphabetical order. We should always be above Brighton and Brentford. That's just a fact. And that's not like complacency
or arrogance. It's just a fact. And where we were and to where we finished, it shows that since Christmas, we haven't got our shit together.
I mean, Brentford's this just sums up what's going on. And, you know, this isn't like reactionary. Brentford have got us bent over a fucking barrel. First of all, they managed to persuade us that their best player was Scott Hogan and sold him to us. So we're taking, you know, their allegedly best player. They've been taking the piss out of us for a few seasons now. Well, let's start before that. They gave us Dean Smith. But Dean Smith, he's all right. We'll let him off. So Scott Hogan, and then managed to sell us for a pretty penny Konsa and Watkins, both decent players. That's all well and good. But the fact that they're finishing higher than us after they've sold us,
having spent,
you know, these players,
fuck all.
Yeah.
They haven't really reinvested that money to any great extent.
No, we're just in the stadium. We've built their stadium.
Yeah, Aston Villa should have a fucking blue plaque on that stadium.
And it's this thing of having a plan and believing it. That's what I mean with the Geordies. You know, they brought Eddie Howe in. He's probably gone in with a very simple plan. This is what it's going to be. The players have gone, oh, great. All of a sudden, the fans believe, and you see what St James's is like now. It's kind of back to what it used to be. It's rocking up there. So when they turn up to play at home, they believe. I think Brentford have got their plan and the way they work on and off the field, and I think they really believe in what they're doing, as do other clubs around there. I don't think, we've said this before, but I don't think a lot of those Villa players really believe that what they're doing is going to get them over the line.
Yeah, I mean, Gerrard needs to have a good start next season just to get the fans believing. Because if the players don't believe, the fans don't believe, you know, it's really apparent. And
it was walking away from the ground after Palace and Burnley that the mood was so apathetic.
It just rubs off on everybody. And but once you get a bit of momentum and a bit of belief, then it's amazing what that can actually do. I mean, we've seen it in the Championship in the 10-game winning run, which came out of absolutely nowhere. There was a seismic change in belief once four or five games won.
You saw the shift relatively quickly when you started going into the second O'Neill season, when he had a really good sort of second half of the season, the transfer business we did, when the learner money started coming in. We picked up momentum and everyone was like, right, now we're rocking and rolling.
And that's partly what, you know, why you get really frustrated with this City situation, because you're hoping that you at least get to the stage now, even though, you know, Gerrard's come in, but he's inherited a reasonably decent level of squad that can or should be at least assembled, that it doesn't have a glass jaw. You want to be having a team, the first, you know, be hard to beat. That's obviously always the first step in creating a team, become hard to beat. And so Manchester City know this is going to be a tough game. Not a tough game if Villa, like, have a couple of sparks and, you know, put us under pressure, but a tough game from, you know, 0 to 90. But you had a feeling once that if they scored, it was going to be House of Cards collapsing. And we haven't got that. We can't grind it. We can't, we're not savvy.
Or resilient. Kind of
resilience or streetwise, which, I know we'd always come back in the Championship, but that was because we had better players. So you'd expect that. We, you know, sometimes we needed to go a goal down just to wake up. But in this, you can't do that in the Premier League.
Fundamentally, we're not the sum of our parts, are we? That's the frustration about those teams around and above us. You know, West Ham are the extreme of that, because I think they've got a few very, very good players like Suchek and Rice, etc., who level them up. But then the general West Ham squad, I think they're just very well organised. Bearing in mind, they've had a similar trajectory to Villa in the last 2 or 3 years. When you think about, they were, what, a place above us the year we just about stayed up. And then they just put their foot on the afterburners a bit like we did. But they just kept going and they believed. And I think our belief and our momentum's fallen off.
Moyes, I mean, it's Moyes' organisation. Yeah. That's the main, savvy. You know, the main thing. And, you know, I think I've said it before, maybe in Match Club, where there's a certain level of player that we can buy, which we can buy top six players, as in, you know, sixth, fifth. We probably can't buy top three players. But if you're organised and well-drilled, then that allows you to punch up. So that's how you take points off the bigger boys. And, you know, our record, and Gerrard alluded to this, has been, he's not very satisfied, you know, happy with it, has been bad this season after Smith did actually make some inroads in terms of taking points. Because that was my biggest plus point of last season. It's like, right, next season we can kick on now, because the players will be confident they can go toe-to-toe with these teams.
Mm-hmm. I just think there's something, and Gerrard's like, he doesn't have universal approval. I know no manager does, but he's really polarizing at the minute, because he's getting, I mean, you look at the Nakamba sub. I mean, I don't think there's probably another manager in the league that wouldn't have made a sub like that just at that time
to shore things up.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of the textbook tactical move, isn't it, at that point with 20 minutes to
go? It is.
Because if he hadn't have done it, and that still happened, that 3-2, I mean, could you imagine?
He just said, why didn't you protect your back four?
Yeah, it's a hindsight thing. I mean, yes, it doesn't send out a signal. It sends out that signal where everybody's going, right, lads, back to the wall time. And it's exactly the signal that it did send out, where if you leave him on, you know the pressure's coming. So what are you going to do? Not react to that? So it's a logical move. So it's hard to be harsh with that. And, you know, quite frankly, nobody would have been surprised if Nakamba had started this particular game.
Yeah, and I just wonder if the fan base are like that. Is there some players in the Villa camp that whether training's got harder, whether it's a bit more disciplinary and something like that, you just get yourself, they're maybe not all pulling in the same direction like they were last season at the start of the season?
Yeah, we spoke about that before, where the standards get raised and you get that split of the guys who really buy into it, the ones who kind of go, this is maybe just at the edge of my ability, and some of them will embrace it and go, right, I'm going to grasp this by the, you know,
Well, there's a few that have signed, like, you know, they've signed their first big Premier League contracts with Villa, where, you know, whether they've come up via the Championship or, and they all, you know, they've been in easy streak. And, you know, Smith was always, as we said, was a nice chap, and sometimes the team was in his image. So it's a bit of a culture shock to them that suddenly you got this more, let's say, meaner and more driven character come to town, and suddenly that easy streak you were in probably made you a bit uncomfortable. And you know, some people don't react that way, and those are the people you have to weed out if they're not reacting in a positive light and embracing the challenge and the new standards.
And just like Edens did with the books, you know, if you don't believe in what we're doing here, you're out the door.
Yeah, but you know, you have to go back to last season where we were taking scalps, and that is the head scratcher. Because you know, we can't really say, "Oh, this team's shit. The players are crap." We're actually a better squad than we were last season. I mean,
certainly more balanced on paper.
You can have a debate about Grealish, but the fact that, you know, he'd missed a third of the games, but unfortunately, some of his replacements have barely kicked a ball. So you know, that's a grey area. But apart from that, you would say you would fancy this team against last season's team.
You'd like to think so.
So that is a concern.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, let's do the start of the show now, at the end.
Welcome.
Time for some news. Shall we have, this is, I thought let's have a look at the Sun and see what they've got. Right, so they've got zoo attack, horror moment, zookeeper has finger torn off by lion after sticking hand in cage. I mean, what else could possibly happen when you stick your hand in a lion's cage?
Do you think you'd lick it or?
In a Jamaican zoo. Or shall we have the Villa news?
Let's go with just the Villa news, I think.
Yeah.
Manchester City stick their hand in the Villa cage, and after it looked like it was going to be bit off, they
Villa gave them their lunch.
Yeah. Started to lick it at the end.
Tickled Villa's tummy.
Yeah. Right. Feel like we're at the start of the show now. It's like this build-up. Kamara, reinforcements from Marseille. That's not the first time we've had reinforcements from Marseille.
What we need is a box-to-box midfielder from France.
Apparently this one's a bit better.
Yeah.
Jury's out. He looks pretty good on the videos, but we'll see.
Oh, You don't sound very certain.
It's so
hard
to
gauge with the French league, isn't it?
It is very hard to gauge with the French league.
What's that Manchester United YouTube channel chap? Yeah, he refers to it as the French Farmers League. I mean, most people, you know, well, it's a Twitter thing. Everybody gets excited about a new signing. But I like new signings. But when you tell me they're from the French Farmers League, I can't get excited anymore. I have to see them at least 10 games in with my own eyes.
Yeah.
And I want money back 10 day. If you're buying a player from the French Farmers League, they need to have a money back guarantee, I think.
I mean, one thing I would say with it is if he's the right profile, it's great that they've done their business really early. Get him over here as soon as you can. Get him settled before pre-season and get a full pre-season under his belt. So I'm hoping that that's the strategy that Villa are moving fast this summer.
They went on that charm offensive, didn't they? Everybody was over watching Marseille. It was about a month ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Perslow, Langer and Gerrard.
So you'd imagine they've been working on this one for a while.
Yeah, and Gerrard's not going to go over with both of them unless it's a real... Because, you know, when it's out there... I mean, you look at... everybody's myopic and they think it's just Villa are after a player, but you know, you just, if you take a step back and Google his name, it's like Manchester United in for Spurs, in for Inter Milan, but the main one seemed to be Atletico Madrid,
who can offer, you know,
So
good paycheck in a
so most
stage.
People didn't think, but I think it's the Gerrard card that is. If we didn't have Gerrard this season, nobody's believing this new project. Oh no. Yeah, we're going places, bit rich owners, blah blah blah. Because we've kind of spunked that by finishing 11th and then 14th when we were really budgeting for, like, you know, 7th, 8th. But now with the Gerrard card, you can still play. You know, first, you know, full preseason, his own players. You've still got that leverage to build a new narrative. So.
Yeah, have you met my mate Coutinho? Yeah, he's here. He coming over? Yep.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And we've got a few French speakers already. Bonus.
Although we'll be sending one of them back to Marseille in a part exchange.
Gilbert will be going as well. Good point. We've got no French speakers. Oops.
But yeah, as I said, I'm not getting too excited. But, you know, obviously we do our little research and he looks pretty good in terms of what we're after. But yeah, the key is... in terms of what Gerrard wants to do, I think he actually said you will see very soon the activity we've been involved in. I think a lot has been made about this full preseason, and he wants players in early because he wants his guys or the new key parts to a spine to be in as early as possible. No fannying, you know, deadline day or getting players in once the season's kicked off, because you're going to have the disruption of the World Cup, so you'll need to, you want them in bedding, and we've got to you know, we've got to be winning from the off.
And I think the only way we'll do like a bit like, you know, the Dinya type deal is if something amazing pops up and we think actually this is too good to turn down. But I don't think that's the strategy that we're leading with.
The opportunists.
Yeah, those sort of opportunist type deals. I think we did that with Coutinho. We did it with Dinya. Now it's about being really sort of surgical in the way we work.
Yeah. In other news, Olsen, our new goalkeeper, could be his only game for Villa, was assaulted as the coked up Manchester City fans came on. I say that because it's become an increasing issue in football, and there used to be pitch invasions all the time.
Players weren't getting clobbered.
Players weren't getting clipped, and these arseholes weren't, you know, being asked, wrecking goalposts and everything as if it's a new kind of fad. Wrecking their own goalposts.
Celebrating like it's something that £1 billion spend doesn't make you expect. Like it was a shock.
Yeah.
I know it was a dramatic way to win it and all that, but...
Hopefully he's all right, Olsen, but the thing is, these things always fucking backfire. These idiots will... There'll be over-the-top laws that come in to... Yeah. That impinge on everybody else's freedom. I remember somebody was mentioning... you know, some of the kerfuffles at the Burnley game at the top where somebody took in a pint and refused to hand it in to the steward, who said, you're not allowed to take pints in. And sure enough, that pint ended up over about 40 people's heads when it was thrown in the air like, you know, a Euro celebration when England play. You're not helping the cause. I want to, you know, when I'm watching some of these games, I want to be sitting there with having a pint so at least I get something out of the game. I don't want to be... not doing that because I don't have the choice because some fucking knobhead's thrown a pint over 40 people's heads.
I said it before, and that's why they probably won't allow alcohol in the stand in England, which they do in Germany and other ones, because...
It's a conversation there behind the scenes. It's something they want to bring in, but these dickheads punching players and stuff, you're not winning the argument there.
No. Especially after all, you know, the whole sort of stuff with the Euros last summer, they would have been hoping that we've worked through that, but actually they're showing that we haven't. You know, we've sort of come out of COVID and
there's been a regression. But anyway, that's another subject we'll discuss elsewhere. Meanwhile, Mark Delaney has been put out to pasture, it seems.
Yeah, he's obviously been at the club a long time, on and off, but in the academy since 2008, apparently, so he's been there a long time.
Yeah, obviously a player as well. I mean, you know, when these news breaks, everybody's going, oh, he's a great servant, blah, blah, blah. You know, then that's it. Nobody says, well, why? You know, what's the situation here? Nobody really analyses the situation. Could this be a disappointment in where the academy's going? Because after winning the Youth Cup last season, it's the headlines haven't been that great in terms of, you know, where they're finishing the league and overall performances. Although I think, you know, you'd be content with like your Ramses and, you know, Chuck Moeka and... Timmy, a Rogueman, you know,
coming
that's through kind of,
and people like Kessler, Barry have done reasonably well on loan.
So you don't know if it's or he's got something in his personal life, or if he wants a change. So
or even if the club just want a bit of a reshuffle and
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is this a Gerrard thing where he wants some kind of different direction or whatever?
I think we'll certainly see more members of staff and players as well, obviously, out the door in the next couple of weeks, yeah, as you always get at this time of year anyway.
Meanwhile, I mentioned this on Something for the Weekend, a bit of a farce at the Burnley game in terms of tickets, which I myself I would guess around a couple of hundred found themselves not being able to get in to the ground with their season tickets because of it being a rearranged game, and maybe they had passed on their tickets because it was a Christmas fixture originally because they couldn't make it, and that hasn't been reset to the season ticket card. But it's something like, come on, there's 5 months. Surely you can work out the communication on that, not have any oversights and make sure a season ticket's going to work. But alas, not. But I'm sure there'll be a bit of an investigation into that, no doubt. By myself, maybe. in terms of people going out, Villa women's team have, I think these four players came to the end of the contracts, didn't they? Jodie Hutton, Nat Hay, Shana Hales and Sophie Haywood.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a bit of a reshuffle there. But there has to be an improvement. There's got to be that continuous improvement in the women's. And they took one step, positive step this season, and now they've really got to be aiming at that mid-table situation.
Yes. I mean, obviously, you know, Jodie Hutton, it's a sign of the improvement, I like to think, when Jodie Hutton was the first player to go pro at the club, wasn't she? First female player to go sign a pro contract.
I can neither confirm or deny fact.
I am confirming.
Good. Right. Letters of complaint. Please address them to Chris Bird if he's wrong with that knowledge.
Love letters.
Now it's time for Media Muppets. Right, Mr. Phil Shaw, have you got anything fresh and funky in the Media Muppet trough this week?
Well, I'm going back to subscription base because I'm going after The Athletic's Greg Evans on two fronts today because he's annoyed me twice.
Not his tweets.
Oh, well, yes, we'll get on to that in a second. Firstly, it was about the possible transfer news that broke about Villa signing Marseille's Boubacar Kamara that we've already spoke about. The first person to break the story and say that it was more than a passing interest was the Italian journalist Mario Moretto. He was then credited and amplified by our friend Fabrizio Romano. But, of course, later on, The Athletic's David Ornstein and Greg Evans seemingly had to combine to manage to spit out 200 words without crediting Moretto at all. They just simply said, The Athletic understands. And let's just say, well, do you understand? That's not how it worked whenever I was doing it. I mean, if you didn't break it, you said who did break it.
Yeah, no, exactly. At least credit it. Bit like the Battery Hens and what they did to my first Aston Villa WTF newsletter where they said sources and understand. And it's like, no, you didn't. You just fucking read my newsletter, you pricks. That was on the some various, very specific details about the North Stand expansion, which I knew for a couple of weeks and basically just put out on, you know, saved them for this newsletter. And then they put out a story literally like, you know, an hour later. And the same thing. Nobody quotes people nowadays. It's how you get away with it. The standard of journalism has fucking dropped dramatically. I mean, I used to pull my hair out bloody 10 years ago. Some of the nincompoops I had to work with. And I mean, sometimes you do these interviews when you're interviewing actors and stuff, round tables where there's other people there. And yeah, I got into arguments with them basically over incompetence and stuff. I mean, it's quite funny, really. But the levels, but now it's a shocker where it's fallen. Anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, you're right, and it's all valid. And then, of course, you get on to, like you said, I'm burying the lead. Greg's tweet, of course, at the end of the game, the end of the Manchester City-Aston Villa game, he goes, City are champions. What a comeback under such pressure. What a team they are. Disappointing for Villa in the end. Full stop. So it's just symptomatic of the press in general. I mean, he's a Villa reporter. You should be leading with how abysmal it was that Villa threw away another 2-goal lead instead of cheerleading for the Abu Dhabi group. They've enough people cheerleading for City at the minute.
I mean, all I'll say there, it's sometimes a bit tone deaf where you're trying to be like the overall football perspective, but you have to realise where your core audience is in that respect when you're tugging off the opposition that Villa have just played. Basically.
On a weekly basis.
Yes. Right, let's get on to these 3 points. Let's blaze through these so people can go back to their normal lives for 3 months. Although we will be continuing through this pre-season. Right, point number one. Now, it's been a bit of a mix of response to this. La Liga issued a press release after Mbappe's, basically deciding mysteriously to stay with PSG, even after he'd been credited in the past to say, no, even if they get Zidane as manager, that still wouldn't change his mind. But La Liga has issued a press release saying that the French club attacks the economic stability of European football and puts at risk hundreds of thousands of jobs.
Yeah, it's a bit unique.
The books just don't line up, do they, with the amount of money they're spending on him? And I can't remember off the top of my head.
The numbers were stupid. It was ridiculous.
The crazy numbers. And I didn't believe all those kind of, he is essentially the sporting director and he has approval on signings and all that kind of shit.
Just think, it's a bit weird that, La Liga as a body, like as a league, are making a complaint on behalf of one of their clubs, even though it is Real Madrid, that somebody hasn't signed for them. That's the strange bit of it. The sentiment is correct, but I mean, can you imagine the Premier League making a statement that somebody turned down Manchester United or something like that there and said, oh, this is awful, this is terrible for football, why can they not come and play for Manchester United? What about the other 19 teams in the league? You're meant to act on behalf of them all.
The fact that Barcelona are in trouble financially from overspending ridiculous amounts and Real Madrid aren't what they used to be. I mean, that league, I think it's in danger. I mean, the Premier League has probably done one on them in terms of consistently in terms of money. And, you just look at the proliferation of English teams in Europe this season. It's starting to be glaringly obvious who the powerhouse is. And, Haaland come in. That pretty much guarantees the Champions League for Manchester City. I mean, La Liga has completely got a point, but nobody's doing anything about this. You can't be spending that ridiculous amounts and giving players such power like that. I don't think they're going to win like a Champions League with this stance. They need a manager who can create a team. They've got resources, they've got money, but
they don't have togetherness, it doesn't appear.
They never will have. It's like, I wouldn't say Primark Galacticus, but you know what I mean. It's like a TikTok Galacticus almost.
It's just like a computer game in cheat mode.
And it's all fashion over football, really. There's no soul anymore. I'd be interested to see if this does go to court, because they are filing complaints to French administrative courts and the European Union over his contract. So some extra intrigue, as well as, at the same time, Burnley and Leeds. I think Leeds won't be bothered too much now.
No.
But in terms of going after Everton for their financials, shall we say.
Yeah, after their losses.
So we'll see how that one pans out as well.
The problem is, if it's a lesser team like Everton are exposed, you'll set a precedent and then they'll have to look at other teams. So, this is why these things don't happen. The big boys just don't want a smaller team to be exposed and how it's run, and then the same rules will then be applied to them.
Yeah, hopefully the Spiegel keep hammering away at Manchester City, because it's funny, what they've done. They've just basically lay out the facts and everybody else just ignores it. It's like, well, come on, let's do something about these facts. And everybody's like, yeah, it's too much hassle. Just let them get on with it. It's not fair, but who cares? It's astounding. Right, point number two. As we've mentioned already, pitch invasions have suddenly turned nasty. What used to be, celebratory events. You can't have one without some player getting whacked. I mean, the worst one was probably Billy Sharp getting, it's like a running headbutt from a Forest fan, wasn't it?
Like a kamikaze.
Yeah.
It was like a Nathan Baker header.
It was the strangest thing I'd ever seen. I mean, he's just standing there, like, doing no harm to anybody, and all of a sudden he just gets bundled into.
It's almost like that fan started his run-up from the bloody stands. He's kind of charging like a bloody bull. I mean, the Vieira one was...
Yeah, the Vieira one wasn't great either, was it? That was at Goodison, wasn't it, on...
First thing I want to do is deck the knobhead who's, giving it large and giving him shit. Then there was the Swindon situation as well, with Swindon players fighting with Port Vale fans.
It's not been a great week.
No, and there is a concern from police level and club level now that one of the roots of all this and what happened in the Wembley in the Euros, the final, is this kind of cheap cocaine, as we'd like to point out. It's kind of fueling these idiots. To the extent, if you don't think it's a big thing and we're just kind of getting all Mary Whitehouse about it. Well, there's a reason why Villa are actually paying a private drugs dogs firm at the Liverpool game, for example, the last time they showed up. I don't know if they got the same dogs in for Burnley, but definitely they'd paid for them for the Liverpool game. And the West Yorkshire police had them for when Villa went to Leeds and three Villa fans got pulled out by the dogs and not let in. So that's, you know, that's just on a Villa level. And apparently it's kind of happening, and it's something that's flagged now, and it's a real concern. And the government actually brought in some legislation now, I think it was on last Thursday, specifically pointing to cocaine, and there being, I think, 5-year bans involved or prison sentences for any disorder that results from drug-infused disorder at football. So it's actually reached up to government level, and legislation has already been passed. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next season, to see if people have calmed down after the novelty of the first season, full season back after the pandemic. We shall see, or the lockdown, should I say. Point number three, the US women's team are now going to be paid on equal terms with the men's team after equal payment agreement was reached. I remember Australia announces, we did this in the 3 points, did we?
Yeah, not? A while back, yeah.
I think England are also do equal pay as well, don't they?
I mean, I think it's very justified in America, where their women's team is a fairly dominant force compared to the men's team.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think England do it in this country, which by the sound of your silence, you're surprised by.
I did. Actually, it wasn't that I'm surprised. I hadn't realised.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think some other big kind of examples, because I think they got it through on the England side of things, because the men are thinking, well, we don't fucking need any money.
Well, they actually give their fees away, don't they, anyway? Men's.
Exactly. Nice. It's like, it's not even toilet paper to them, so that's why they can do that. And, you know, for a woman, but to get a bonus from England is like a nice bonus.
I think it's big news in America, because obviously politically, Republican, Democrat, left, right, and you have a lot of the women's national team, you know, on one side of that debate as well. So yeah. It's big news over there.
I mean, personally, I think going forward from next season, I would make Aston Villa men's and women's teams equal pay as well if Villa's men's finish in the bottom half, then they should get paid exactly what the women get paid. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
What, can you even work out the numbers? What would the percentage decrease be in that? It's got to be like a few thousand, 100,000% or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know for a fact.
Is it about 970 something grand that the whole women's operations run off?
It's less than a million, the whole team, it's like 890 odd thousand. So like literally one, like let's say a leading player would be on a year, potentially less than, like our top players, like a third. They'd earn what, a third of what, let's say a third or even a quarter of what a top Villa men's player, and I'm talking top, earns in a week, they probably earn a year.
Yeah, hello, Mr.
But I think that's a great punishment, and for the men's team, and you know, a step in the right direction for equality.
Yeah, it's like, hello, Mr. Coutinho, you take a 70% wage reduction. I think if you look at the small print here, there's this new clause for next season, it might go a bit higher.
It's equality, and the women will hear, women Villa players will hear that it's equal pay. They'll be like, fucking hell, let's buy this house. I'm going to buy a house, a car, and everything. And then they get they read the small print, and they're like, oh fuck, I've just bought a house that I can't afford. But yeah, just as an incentive, mainly for the Villa men's team next season, equal pay if you finish bottom half, and we're talking equal pay to what the women are earning at the moment. All in favour, say aye.
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 Aye. Right, normally we're going to the match, but we've done that already. Do you want to do it again?
No.
None of it's going to be the same result, no.
The season can definitely
do one,
I think.
We'll talk about the season in a future podcast, but all I'll just say my own personal reflection is the fact that unfortunately, I think I missed 3 games of my season ticket at Villa Park due to, you know, like Christmas, being abroad, blah, blah, blah. But unfortunately, they were 3 games that Villa won. Now, there was only 6 In total,
we only won 6 out of 19, yeah.
At Villa Park, 6 out of 19. So I saw them win 3 out of 16 fucking games at Villa Park.
Relegation form.
Well, I had 100% record, so I can say nothing.
Yeah, and Phil Shaw rocks up one game.
And got a moment.
And Gerrard's first game gets the win. So, you know, when it's like renewal, price increase, it's like, well, if I think too hard about this season, I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm going to ever, you know, ever having a season ticket in my life again, because that isn't value, is it?
Well, what did we say, Matchler? What was your cost per win? Pretty horrendous.
It's like 200.
A couple hundred pound a win. That doesn't work out very well for Moneyball, David.
Oh, it's fucking shocking. But
Billy Bean wouldn't be impressed.
If you're practical about it, it's like, I mean, you obviously you're not going to expect to win every time, but I'm sorry, but, you know, a fucking decent team that spends multiple millions on players can only serve up one of its loyal fans 3 wins in 16 games. It's a shocker.
That is a shocker, isn't it?
The Manchester City game was just bitter because we know, you know, we're not surprised. We're not sitting here going, oh, God, if only. It's like we've been in this position.
We find new and creative ways to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, don't we?
Yeah, we'd have been the talk of the town going into the close season. The team that just pulled the rug from underneath Manchester City. I mean, it would have worked the other way if Liverpool had failed to beat Wolves and we'd served up the title to Liverpool and they fucked up against Wolves. It would have been even funnier. So it would have worked either way, whoever won that title, who turned out to win the title in the end. Hey ho. Anyway, just a big, big thanks to the My Old Man Said patrons for sticking with us and supporting us this season and being actively involved in Match Club, which for my money is the best community in this Villaverse in terms of humour and straight talking. If you want some fun access to an extra podcast channel and more importantly Match Club 24/7 throughout these summer months, then please do go to myomensaid.com and sign up there, and that will certainly help us evolve it for next season, because we like to evolve and we will grow,
continual improvement, just like the Villa.
New and hopefully impressive ways, so watch out for that. Also, if you want to get involved in My Old Man Said, especially if you're a designer, if you're half decent at Photoshop or whatever, get in touch, david@myoldmansaid.com, and let's talk. Because for 10 years, I've been looking for somebody who wants to come on board and actively help with the visual side of things, which there are many plateaus, and there's a proper opportunity there. So do get in touch. And also writers as well. Let's fire up that website once again. Dust it down. It's been a couple of years now where I've really been focusing on the podcast, so it'd be good to get that rocking and rolling as well. Right, any final words? Please, by the way, make sure you follow and follow the show on whatever podcast app you listen to, because while we'll still be putting out shows, maybe it won't be on that kind of regular post-match timeline, because there won't be any post-matches, so there'll be a bit more ad hoc on what day they would pop out. So it's best to follow the show on whatever podcast app you use, and do follow the show on Twitter @MyOldManSaid. Any final words, gentlemen, for this show?
No.
just don't let that happen again. I thought after Wolves it wasn't going to happen again, but oh, I was wrong.
Yeah.
It means there's the first of the goals for next season. We want a 2-0 down and win 3-2 game. We haven't had one of them in a fucking long time.
Coventry, maybe?
Possibly.
I want one of those 2-0 up and we win 2-0.
And we win 2-0, yeah.
That's my goal for next season.
And we win 3-0. We score the next goal. What a novelty.
I mean, I'd even take being 2-0 up and the opposition score and we win 2-1. I'd take that as well. That'd be continual progress.
Just win.
Just win. There you go.
But yeah, we can't be happy with 14th, especially when you got Brentford and what seemed to be a relegated Newcastle all finishing above you without really much sweat. A big thank you for listening for all the 2021/22 season. We hope that 2022/23 will be more fulfilling. It's going to be a bit of a wacky one with that World Cup in there, isn't it?
Well, it's going to be like real fragmented season, isn't it? It's going to be pre-World Cup, post-World Cup. It's going to be almost biblical.
It's all about the money.
Ah, yes.
Right, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.